Just come on. I'm trying to share some thoughts.
Thoughts on residents.
Jeremy, would you like to begin?
I heard you could hear me, is that okay? Yeah, good. Well, I'm already really feeling the resonance. Yeah, it's been such a blessing to be here with you all. Lovely, but it's hard to follow what we've just experienced. Even so, when I first heard the theme of this gathering, I started going on a long walk. I started investigating all different kinds of resonance. Cognitive resonance, sympathetic resonance, morphic resonance, collective resonance, orbital resonance, to name a few. And then I realized, in fact, all these resonances really come together in one central principle, attunement, sympathetic vibration, affinity, merging, concord, love. And as Nirvana says, everything in the world draws something to itself. Both magnet and amber attract. Whether you are iron or straw, you will be drawn. So I'm not going to embark on any detailed scientific explanation of all the different kinds of resonance. I'd just like to speak from my own lived experience and weave into it some of the lived experiences of others, especially those in the project which Shakespeare mentioned, the resonance project of René Levi, who investigated the conditions and the group practices that fostered and amplified collective resonance. And I'd also like to suggest perhaps some answers to a question posed by Sheikh Kabir, though I'm sure you'll have many more answers than I can possibly offer. And that question is, how can we consciously use resonance to accomplish the purpose of our lives? And what is that purpose? Well, I guess for all of us, we share the same essential intention to seek, to know, to love, and to serve the divine reality as the source of love and truth. But every soul is unique with its own special gifts and destined way of realizing its purpose. Again, as Nirvana says, each of us was made for some particular work, and the desire for that work has been placed in our hearts. And he also says, whatever the soul in man and woman strives to do, the ear and the eye of the soul's king are at the window. So we can follow that yearning, that passion. Again, Nirvana says it all. He says, passion is the elixir that renews. Seek passion, seek passion, seek passion. I don't know here what the word for passion is in the original language, but I assume it must mean burning love or something like that.
We should check up on that.
Yeah, it's from the movie collection, I think, that particular quote. And again, he says, whatever it is you seek to marry, go absorb yourself in that beloved. Assume its shape and qualities. That marriage, that absorption, that merging is resonance. And one of the signs of connection to resonance at a deep level within a group is that we may become aware of the entrance of spirit. And we can call that by various names. We can call it the Holy Spirit. We can call it higher power. Or as many people in the Resonance Project called it, they said, that overwhelming thing that happens. And I'm sure we've all noticed at certain moments, a palpable presence descends, a kind of inner hush and awe, an intimate embrace that pervades the group. And of course, it can also come to the individual in various experiences, especially that of synchronicity. So we can ask ourselves how we might call or invoke that spirit. You know, the Blackfoot Indians always left an empty space in their council of elders to honour the mysterious dimension of the unseen, to leave space for the wisdom that comes from a higher source. And to open that flow, you know, to open that window into the flow of energy from that source, one of the things we can do is connect with our own higher emotions. In fact, through those higher emotions, we can absorb ourselves in the beloved. Bearing in mind, of course, that the higher level of the emotions, the energetic level of the higher emotions, is finer than that of the intellect. And in listening to people's experience of collective resonance, Levy came to realize, and I quote from her here, she says, "It transcends the intellectual exchange of ideas to encompass intuition, the intelligence of the body, and the energetic space between people." She also came to know, and I quote again, "It taps into greater sources of wisdom and intelligence than the individual and even the group can access alone." And she concludes that it's vital to tap into these sources of connection at this point in human evolution, because we are witnessing ever more clearly the breakdown of our more familiar efforts, debate, discussion, negotiation, and compromise. In fact, we can see that as the ushering in of a new paradigm, really moving away from the mental paradigm to a more unitive, integral state of unitive consciousness. And often there's little connection to the higher, genuinely higher emotions in our emotive culture, which is so often ruled by emotionalism and sentiment. We can ask ourselves how we distinguish the different levels of emotion so we know we are not ruled by the lower impulses, what Jacob Beers calls the shallow idolatries. So we can ask ourselves, what ignites the higher emotions in us? What causes the heart to open? For me, it is music, nature, those two very much there. Spiritual conversation, poetry, beauty, the creative imagination, a loving relationship with a soulmate, deep friendship with spiritual companions, and reverence for great souls who awaken and teach us and act as exemplars for us. So just to focus on the first two, music and nature. As Sheikh Kabir has said, music has the power to move, inspire, and heal the soul. As Pythagoras said, the highest goal of music is not entertainment, but to connect us with our higher nature. And Suleiman Dede said, "Zikr opens the heart and makes the intelligence more refined and expansive, creating a beautiful condition similar to the one brought about by great music." As Mevlana said, "Today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door for a study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument." And for me, you know, nature is a prime mover. There's a built-in vibrational connection between the contemplation, which emerges from the alpha waves in the human brain, and the earth. Although I think, as we had this conversation recently, it's not just the earth. Technically, it's the ionosphere, isn't it? It's the space between the ionosphere and the earth. But everyone sees it, there's this special vibrational connection between that state of meditation or contemplation and immersion in nature. That's why I suppose I love to do the walking zikr, walking in nature, saying the zikr as I go. When I was at school, I was a naughty boy. I absented myself from many compulsory things, including the cadet training corps, which is compulsory, football, cricket, many things. I had nothing whatever to do. I should have been expelled, really. Instead, I walked on the hills above my school, and I used to recite these sublime lines from the poem by Wordsworth, written above Tintern Abbey. And this is how it goes. He says, "I have felt a presence that disturbs me with the joy of elevated thoughts, a sense sublime of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns and the round ocean and the living air and the blue sky and the mind of man. A motion and a spirit that impels all thinking things, all objects of all thought, and rolls through all things." It's a wonderful description of resonance. And of course, when he's talking about thinking, he's not talking about the intellect. He's talking about the totality of all our faculties. And that's made clear when he opens this piece by saying, "I have felt a presence." It's that sympathetic resonance, not the cognitive one. And I guess I was my mother's son because my mother was born in India, and she grew up in a very strict convent run by German nuns. They were very free with using the cane as an instrument of correction. And one day, longing for a breath of fresh air, I should say, actually, that my mother died 2 years ago and I gave the eulogy at her funeral. I wanted to tell the story, but I didn't because I thought it might maybe shock some members of the congregation. But that day, when she wanted to feel that breath of fresh air, she locked a group of nuns in the tuck shop. And she went horseback riding in the foothills of the Himalayas all day. So I resonate with that. And here are some more suggestions as to how we could shift into collective resonance. These are really taken from René Lieban. Very quickly, I can go through 4 or 5 of them. The first is really get to know people in the group at the deepest human level. And she suggests 2 ways to do this. One is to be present in the moment so we can be attuned to their energy. Second, share part of your story that you don't normally share. Self-revelation. This introduces a certain level of vulnerability. But she showed that doing that tends to unite people around their commonalities rather than separate them according to their differences. So that only is self-revelation. Secondly, she said, be comfortable with silence. As Nirvana says, on the threshold are they alone whose language is silence. So although I'm speaking, I hope that what I'm saying, I trust and hope that it's coming from a place of inner silence, a place of contemplation within the heart. Thirdly, be aware of the importance of place, its aesthetic qualities, its location in the environment, even its history. She found that whereas we tend to associate group experiences only in terms of the psychological, spiritual, or emotional dynamics between people, a large number of her respondents said they began by describing in detail the physical aspects of the place where they experience collective resonance. And this place is quite suggestive. I mean, Gaunt's house was originally, the medieval house, was originally a trysting place. a rendezvous for lovers. Fourth, she says, define the space that holds the group, that she calls this containing attraction, and we've just been doing that. It can be a walls of a space, or it can be forming a circle. A containing attraction can facilitate an expansion of group dynamics. Five, follow positive and inspiring stories. As Shekhar Kabir said in the first evening, he said, she related that in listening to those describing their experience of protective resonance, she was struck by the stark contrast between those stories and what she heard in the media. In the foreground, stories of joy, inspiration, personal transformation, love, hope, and healing. And in the background, voices of hate, of fear, of closing ranks and borders, anguish, and despair. We need inspiring stories that resonate. And finally, I'd like to just suggest three further expanding circles of collective resonance, which could form another conversation completely if there's ever time for it. The first is the resonance we feel with our own ancestral inheritance. I'll always intend to take that to the highest possible level. Secondly, the circle of resonance we may feel is the particular genius of our cultural heritage. But again, with the intention of taking it to the highest level. And thirdly, the third circle of resonance we feel as human beings beyond any genetic or cultural identity. And how we combine those three circles of resonance is an interesting question in itself. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman.
Yes. Can you ask me to relate the topic of resonance to the Quran? Traditions of the prophet. So I'm going to share with you some things about that can help us understand the resonance from that perspective and what would happen to us. And then I'll also share with you a particular experience. There is a physical phenomenon of resonance, and just briefly to keep that in mind, because it's a good analogy for what happens to us in the spiritual realm, is that when two entities, when one entity acts on another entity, and the entity that's acted upon, its characteristic nature aligns with the source, time goes to zero. And all that's left is frequency. No more time. Just vibration. That's in a theoretical limit. You know, so it vibrates forever. It never stops. That's what resonance is in the physical world. And I think we can see how that applies to our own experiences in the spiritual world. So the Prophet has this very interesting hadith. He says, spirits are arrayed like hosts, like an army formation. Those that know one another are in affinity or intimacy. And those that deny one another are in conflict. You can see here that when there is a relationship that is positive and builds between heart and heart, there's a possibility of intimacy and closeness nearness. And the other side of it is dissonance, has to do with denial, when we deny each other. And in the Quran, if you look at ayahs that can explain this, what happens to us, you see that there's always a relationship with our Rabb. There is action, something is done, and then there's a vibration, and then an expansiveness beyond anything that we can fathom, expect. So if we think about back to this physical analogy that I mentioned in the beginning, if we think about us as human beings, our innate characteristic is the breath of the Rahman in us. It's what makes us alive, what enlivens us. And that is the characteristic that when it is aligned in alignment with its source, where it's from, it gives us an experience of expansiveness, of bliss, peace, understanding, depth. It can have many different aspects. So there's an ayah in the Quran that's really interesting, I think speaks to it. It says, Allah sends down the most beautiful discourse. A book that is analogous, reflective, and hidden. The skins of those in awe of the Rabb vibrate from it. And then the skins and their hearts incline to the remembrance of Allah. This is Allah's guidance. He guides with it whom He wills. And for one whom Allah has guides, there can be. And if we look at the relationship, the action and relationship between Rabb and human, between our source and ourselves, there is this reciprocity in the Quran. So it says, for example, remember me, I remember you. There's a relationship that keeps going, that is outside of time, outside of place and somewhere else. And when it says, for those who do what is beautiful, there is beauty in them. Or is there a recompense of beauty or beautiful acts? Anything but beauty. See how it gives us the shape of the relationship and what can happen to us. And one that is also well known to us, to many of us, says, those who give up their wealth in the way of Allah are like a seed that produces 7 kernels, and each kernel is 100 seeds. Allah increases whom He wills and is all encompassing and all known. We traditionally misunderstand that to be, I know, I do this, I get something bigger, but it can be understood in a different way. That it's talking about how one little thing we do can result when it's from the right place, with the right intention, with the right alignment between us and our souls, it can result in something much, much greater than anything we can imagine. And there are a couple of interesting hadiths about that, hadith qudsis that we're familiar with. When he says, I am as my servant thinks I am. When I'm with him, when he remembers me, he or she. And if he remembers me in himself, I remember him in myself. And if he remembers me among a group of people, I remember him in a better group of people. And if he comes near me by an inch, I come near him by a yard. Comes near me by a yard, I come near him by a mile, and he comes to me crawling, I come to me running. You see the resonance, what is possible in our relationship with our souls, that there's an expansiveness beyond anything we can imagine. And another hadith says, my servant cannot come closer to me by anything more beloved to me than what I have decreed for him. And the question is, what is this? What has God decreed for us? And my servant continues to come closer to me with unconditional giving. The word is usually translated and understood as extra prayers. But the word nafila, nawafil, also means the giving that has no expectation. And I give you something and I don't want anything back. That is a nafila. Unconditional giving until I love him. Because love happens when we give without condition. Maybe that's the real possibility of love is to learn in ourselves that. To give of ourselves without wanting anything back. And when I love him, I become his ear, his side, his feet. And if he asks of me, I shall surely bestow upon him. And if he seeks my aid, I shall surely aid him. So whatever, in that state, whatever is possible is possible. There are no limits, no boundaries, because time is no longer there. And there are the resonance of the divine qualities. Each one of these qualities has a resonance. That's why we say, you know, each one has a particular meaning that's peculiar to us. Because that's what we resonate with the most. There's a resonance with all of them. Maybe one is much, much more attuned to our innate characteristic of the breath of the Rahman in us. So these possibilities are infinite, but just some examples is the resonance of forgiveness. If we are in a state of forgiveness, without the expectation of something coming back, something happens beyond what we can imagine. The resonance of gratitude. If we're grateful, if we're going to state of gratitude, true gratitude for whatever it is, what kind of expansiveness is possible inside. There are ayahs that reinforce this. You know, gratitude, this says, when your Rabb proclaims, if you are thankful, I shall increase you. I shall increase you. It's a remarkable word. I will make you greater. Something in you will become much, much greater than our little self. And there's a resonance of trust. Many other resonances of generosity, what Kabir talked about at the beginning. Every one of these qualities can resonate with us, can be expressed and known in ways way beyond what we can imagine. And there's maybe something more, for me, very profound resonance, is the resonance of kun. Which can open us up to all possibilities, because that is the creative impulse of life. And if time permits, we'll work with that and do a little zikr around that with the Quran, with the letters. You know, some surahs have letters that nobody knows what they are. Right? So we'll do a zikr with that and see what we can experience. And I'll share with you something that happened couple of years ago. Some of you have already probably told this too, but it's a good story. It was during the time that we were in a course with Camille during Ramadan. Mm-hmm. And at that particular Ramadan, I was eating very, very little. I really limited my intake of food throughout the month. And I was in a state, a deep state of that whole month. And when you don't eat much, when I don't eat much, I feel a particular tenderness in my heart. I'm just like on the verge of tears all the time. And the slightest things affect me emotionally. And this course that we were in was also was on a lot of gifts, a lot of blessings coming. A lot of beautiful insights. And I was taking my son Ali, who was just newborn at that time, for his daily walk. We had a small park next to us. Our tradition is that I play Maghrebi music as we were walking. He sleeps to Maghrebi music. We were walking, it was a really hot day like today, hotter than today. It was a very hot day. And as we were walking, I was feeling this tenderness, something softening in my heart. And there's a little canopy of trees, just a very small area. Nothing. I see it now, and I think, how is this possible? You know, just a few trees that make the shade. And I walked towards that, and just as I stepped, I flew at the threshold of this canopy. Something changed. I felt that I had crossed into a different world. Suddenly it felt very cool. Not cool, not the cool of shade, something else. And I started, you know, there's a playground next to it. There's noise, there are kids everywhere, but it's not. All the noise disappeared. Very quiet. Nobody else was there except me. And I heard something that sounded like singing. And it was kind of a singing, but like a buzzing sound. And I just felt like when I was in this had, but it was a stranger. And then suddenly, from nowhere that I could think of, I knew that the trees loved us. I just knew it in a way that I can't, really cannot, it sounds silly. Maybe I say it now, but in a way that I cannot describe. But the thing is not, I knew that. I knew that for certain, beyond any doubt in my heart, that every tree holds us in a loving embrace and loves us without expectation. They give without anything, wanting anything back. And that they're alive, they're truly alive. They're with us, we just can't. Most of the time they look like we're not so alive. Thank you.
Why don't we go right into the zikr that you are offering to us?
We'll distribute some copies. It's a brief one. And it, let me just say a little bit of, about this. There are some surahs, several surahs in Quran start with these letters that though are not words. Nobody knows what they mean really. There's a lot of interpretation ideas about what they could mean. And to this poor heart, a meaning came that these letters symbolize kun before it becomes. So the letters are all of the possibilities of God's words before they become. They become a particular word. And so that's why nobody knows what these mean, because they're just letters. But they are in the tablet, in the preserved tablet, waiting for the divine command of Kun to become God's word. As in the Quran.
Kun is the word in Arabic when God says Kun, just means be, and it is.
So this is just a few of them, and this comes from a little-known word of Ibn Arabi, called the word of the heart song, the word of spiritual transformation. So I'll say it, we'll chant it, and when you see, everybody has a copy? When you see double A's and double E's, when we chant, make it long, like Alif Lam Mim. When you see these long vowels, and these start, many surahs start with these. Not that some of them are unique, only one surah, like for example, the Kaf Ayah and Sad is the beginning of Surah Maryam. So, Bismillah, we'll do it three times. Bismillah. Alif Lam.
Alif Lam.
This verse is very special. It's an odd word, right? The word of mother. And it's a verse that is often used as a prayer of protection. To protect the sound in our hearts, the sound of these, of the letters before they become. Before they become words. And that's before we become, we're a word. All of us are a word, one of God's words, expressed by himself.